Good evening. Thanks for joining me. I'm Jason Leosetis. This is Outside the Box. Tonight I'm very, very excited to have a guest I've wanted to speak to for quite some time now. And we're going to have a great chat. We're very privileged to have Michael Tellinger with us today. Michael's an author, scientist, a South African author and scientist. A man doing extraordinary things. A man after my own heart. He's doing everything that I've been thinking about for a very long time, and this man's doing it. He's go to the ubuntuparty.org.za, and that's at the bottom of the screen there. You can see under Michael when I bring him on now. Just to introduce you, Michael. Michael's written many books: Slave Species of the Gods, Ubuntu Contributionalism, that's a blueprint for human prosperity exposing the banking fraud, African Templates of the Anunnaki, Adam's Calendar, And so many other things. You know, Michael, I really appreciate it. I know you're doing a lot of work, and you know, you're not getting enough sleep. I know you're doing all sorts of things. Thank you so very much for joining me tonight. Thank you.
Hi, Jason. It's my pleasure, and thanks for showing an interest in what we're doing here in South Africa.
I'll tell you, I've got a huge interest in what you're doing, Michael. I've been watching what you're doing very carefully. I'm very, very, very excited. I want to tell the listeners tonight and the watchers of this show, I'm very excited with what Michael's doing over there. I won't explain what he's doing. He'll tell us himself. I just want to open by saying that at last, humanity, the spell it seems to be lifting. It seems as though there's a smelling salts going around the world. Michael's a part of that massive smelling salts. And it's catching the noses of people worldwide now. And people at last, and I've been saying this for 20 years, people at last are realizing that we're living in a concentration camp. And I believe, Michael, that I believe that humanity is desperate to blossom now, a blossoming of humanity into something better, personally and globally. And I believe that there's something preventing that blossoming, and that something is money. And the people controlling us, and the way forward, as I've said for ages, is creating systems independently of the government and independently of that money. Though, as you say, that money's got to be a bridge. We can't get rid of it straight away. We're like caterpillars crawling on our bellies in great pain and controlled by a system of slavery, and we want to be free now as humanity. So I hope that's a reasonable introduction, Michael, and I'll now unleash you on the people and say thanks for coming on, and we're in big trouble, Michael. But I think sometimes sometimes that suppression has got to get to the point where it's creating such a dislocation in ourselves personally that we know we have to change then, don't we?
Well, I think you said it, that, you know, once we get pushed so far and we can be pushed no further, that's when the breaking point and the critical mass starts to gather and starts to show its head. And that's, I believe, what's happening, as you described. There's a massive global awakening. There's a huge rise of global consciousness. Among humanity, people waking up everywhere, realizing that there's been a huge crime perpetrated on our entire species, not just for a few decades or 100 years, but for thousands of years. This is something that's been going on for a very, very long time. And this is why it's so deeply entrenched in every crack and crevice of our humanness, of our psyche, of our society, of our socio-economic political systems. It is this substance that has been used to enslave us, and the system that was woven and created to keep us enslaved and keep us dumbed down. And I think nobody describes it better in modern Hollywood blockbuster mode than Morpheus in The Matrix. It's spectacular. Mm. You know, I was just watching it the other day again, thinking,
Me too.
My goodness, that movie was just, it spelt it all out. But I don't think the world was ready. It was like it was preparing us subconsciously for what was to come.
Well said, Michael, well said. And I'll tell you something, I think, I was just thinking as you were talking there about what you're doing. I think I've talked to people for a long time about this, and people have had the horrors, and often it's like, well, oh no, I just can't face any more bad news. But something's changed now, because I say to people, I work with people who are self-harming, who are depressed and everything, and I say to them, look, There's a secret most people hold in this world now, and that secret is that they're in terrible despair, and they know they're trapped in a prison, both mentally and in a system that's forcing depression and uneasiness and slavery and agitation on them. But they keep it secret because they're heroes, because they're really, really, really resilient, and they're great, and I admire them for that. But it's that secret that people don't talk about which perpetuates it, you know. But I say to these people, Michael, yeah, that actually, you know, if you felt comfortable in the system, you'd have to worry about it, you know. So it's the very feeling of uncomfortableness, which is telling us that we've got to change, isn't it? You know, it's beautiful times, very exciting, you know.
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's the fear. It's the fear of acknowledging that something is wrong, because once you go through that, once you acknowledge it, you then have to do something about it.
Yes,
And once people work through that fear, they become active participants in what you and I are now discussing. And that's the beautiful thing that you mentioned is this awakening, mass awakening. I get thousands of emails every week from people all over the world that find the Ubuntu movement, and they become like reborn Christians in a way. They get so excited. They're like little children. They're like little children that found the most amazing present, or the most... you know, it's like you can sense the release and the relief and their joy and excitement in their emails when they make contact with us. it's and one of the common messages that we get is thank you so much for what you're doing. You're saying what I've been thinking all my life,
yeah,
and you're doing what I've been thinking all my life, and now I know that I'm not crazy, and I know that there's a big global community that think like I do. And that's pretty much what this is all about, is giving people the sense of comfort that they're not crazy, they're not alone, that there are millions and millions of people that think like they do, but they don't always talk about it when they go down to the local pub. But you'd be surprised, you know, 10 years ago, if you brought up something like this around a beer at your local pub, you'd probably be laughed at and jeered at. Try that today and you'll see how many people stand up and support you. And suddenly it's no longer a one against many kind of debate. It'll be a very interestingly balanced situation if you raise this at your local pub.
Yeah, for sure. So. And you know, Sir Michael, I've been saying this for a while also to people to make them feel better, that despair and depression and want to drink yourself to death and stuff, and that feeling of just that feeling of hopelessness is actually it's a natural response from a healthy mind and body, which is in a system that's crushing and killing it, isn't it?
It sure is. But so therein really lies the solution, because that's what we're doing right here. Now that we know that we're not alone and that there are millions who think like us, possibly billions, now we got to provide a solution for the people and share this the good news with everybody, that there is a bright light at the end of the dark and gloomy tunnel of our human misery that's been imposed on us for so many decades and centuries and millennia. We've come to the end of that period. It's not an easy path. I know that because I walk it every day. It's what I do all day, every day, from the moment I wake up, and I know how difficult and tough it is.
Me too.
But that doesn't mean we're not going to walk it. That means that we've begun the journey of 1,000 miles, and we've begun it with the first few steps. And the good news is that we're not only a few steps into that journey, we're several decades into that journey already. In my particular case, we're more than a decade into that journey. You said you're 2 decades into that journey, and there'll be millions of people who are deep into this journey of sharing this information of enlightenment and emancipation for humanity. So it's important to recognize that we live on a prison planet. It's really the simple fact of the matter, and the sooner we realize it, recognize it, deal with it, the sooner we can do something about it. We are all equally enslaved, and the tool of enslavement, as you mentioned, is unquestionably money. Money has been used as a tool of enslavement for so long that most people believe, and I actually had this debate with a guy in the local butcher, believe it or not. It's the ex-mayor, the ex-mayor of our little town, who was at the butcher when I was there the other day, yesterday, buying some food for the community kitchen. and started talking to him, you know, asked him, so what do you think of our petition? Have you read through the document that I gave him several weeks ago? And he said, yeah, he doesn't agree with me. He's a real staunch old Afrikaner apartheid era kind of thinking guy, you know. And he said, no, I don't agree with you. You know, what you're saying sounds like communism. You just want to give everything away to the people. I said, no, then you haven't read properly what I've given you. Then you've imposed your own ideas on it, because that's not what it says at all. In fact, it's completely the opposite. And he started talking about all his fears and how this is not going to work and so forth. And it's just spectacular how you bump into people that are just in these boxes. And at the same time, I look at the butcher behind the counter, and he is just shaking his head, smiling, because he gets it. He gets it. So yeah. What I found is that everybody has their own trigger point.
Yeah.
And that's, I've seen that from the wealthiest people that I've known to the poorest people. Everyone has a trigger point. When you say something to them that resonates at the back of their mind, and that they've been struggling and grappling with, and suddenly something shifts. They might have been opposing the idea, and something shifts. But this is exactly what this guy was saying. I said something about money, and he said, well, money is money. We can't do without money. Money has always been there. Money is part of human evolution. And I just laughed, because that's exactly, you know, one of the frequently frequently asked questions that is connected to money and the origins of money, that is a complete misperception by people. Money is not part of human evolution, because it's a very distinct moment in human history when we clearly see that money was introduced by the ancient priest kingdoms or the priest kings, who were the first bankers in their temples and were the first to issue money. And not in the form that we see it today, slightly different forms. And they actually became the first bankers, and they used that original form of money as a tool of enslavement. It's very obvious that that's what happened. And it just shows you the perception that people have, that money is so deeply connected to our subconscious consciousness and to every crack and crevice of our reality today, that many people can't imagine a world without money. But the moment you let go of the fear, the moment you start thinking it through, and that's what I did. I forced myself to imagine a world without money. And the more I started thinking about it, this was in 2005, the more I started thinking about a world without money, the more excited I became. I became like those little children with a new Christmas present. I couldn't give it up. I kept thinking, okay, and what'll happen if in a world without money? What'll happen to transport? And then, oh my goodness, and when I figure that out, what'll happen to selling bread? Or what'll happen to engineering? What'll happen to farming? What'll happen to space technology? What'll happen to prostitution? And I started asking myself all these difficult questions, often that were posed to me by other people. And then I would go away and go, oh my goodness, I haven't thought of that. I haven't figured that one out yet. And I found that the more I had figured out, the easier it became to figure out the rest. And then I suddenly went through this, like, this veil of resistance that was like the edge of this money resistance, disinformation bubble, or whatever you want to call it, right? Controlling bubble. And once I went through that veil, it felt like I could deal with any problem, any question about a world without money, because the answers came swiftly and with very little effort. You could figure it out within minutes, where previously it would take weeks to figure out.
brilliant, Michael. Thank you for all that. This is the first thing I ask people when I'm discussing things. Can you imagine a world without money? And most people look just so perplexed, because most people can't. And the fact that we can't shows how brainwashed and conditioned we are, so dangerously conditioned. Well, how else could it possibly be, people say. And I say, well, that's the very fact that we can't visualize a world without money tells us that we're really in prison. And like you alluded to now with Gurdjieff used to say about, you know, if you want to escape from prison, you first must see a prison. But I think one of the things, Michael, I find with people, One of the blocks is that I think it's a very bitter pill for people to swallow, that they've to admit that they've been tricked most of their lives. You know, it's a bitter pill, man. You know, if someone say, "Hey, well,
it's the ego." See, it's the ego thing, because now you're putting your finger right into the ego problem, and most people will immediately think. And I know my father has been one of those for a long, long time, because he's just so proud, and his ego just won't allow him to admit that he's been lied to and conned and fooled for all of his life.
Yeah,
that's too much to handle for most people.
It's a huge
thing. You know, they'd say, I'm a smart guy. I've been to university. I've got an education. I make millions of dollars every year. I'm too smart for someone to pull the wool over my eyes. And that's how a lot of people think.
And I think that go on.
Yeah. No, that's a spectacular part of the deception, and that letting us be our own enemies. Our own ego actually creates the prison bars around this enslavement.
It really does. And I speak to a lot of young people now, Michael, and I have students, and I'm talking in universities this year as well. And, you know, I remember when I wrote my book, I looked up at the streetlight outside, and it had a web over it, and I thought, oh, my God, that's what they do. They weave a web, a spider's web, over the light, which is job, work, future, and then you have to go into that web to get the student loan. But I said spiders, the government's crueler than the spider. A spider at least cocoons you and eats you in 2 weeks. The government cocoons you and feeds off your energy for life. It's slavery. It's dreadful, dreadful prison, man. It's, you know, it's a crime against humanity. It's dreadful. And I think you said about something new is being born. And a birth is painful. You have to push, don't you, Michael, with a birth and work a little bit. And before we carry on, Michael, I just want to say in front of everybody here a big thank you to you. I'm not joking. A real thank you to you for your courage to come forward and initiate this, because there'll be people who aren't even born yet who will be looking and to thank you for changing and to actually step forward. And I say to people, we've got a responsibility as being the midwives of the future and artists of the future, to actually, you know, I mean, the people who have not yet born yet need our help now, and the people who have died also, because they brought us here, didn't they, Michael? And it, you know, it's a hugely, hugely poignant time, you know.
Well, what I tell you, what I find really encouraging is the response that we're getting on a daily basis, dozens and hundreds of emails from young people around the world. And it's the rate at which they are discovering the Ubuntu contributionism message, you know, world without money, a blueprint for human prosperity. At the rate at which they're discovering the message is, I can see that it's growing exponentially in my own, on my own, you know, PC. And so you can imagine how it's spreading all over the world, this philosophy of people realizing that there is a better way, there is a way out of this misery that we're trapped in. And that's why I refer to, they become like reborn Christians in a way. And it's really quite cute, because, you know, it's overwhelming. It's like when that penny drops for people and they see it, they get it, they totally embrace it, and they know, they don't quite have a hold of it yet, you know, but they know they've got a hold of this truth that resonates within their hearts. And that's the most important thing, because once it starts to resonate in your heart, it's not going to let go of you. And they just want to, you know, they just email us and just bursting with excitement and enthusiasm. And what can I do? I want to tell everybody. And that's what I tell them. Well, do exactly that. Tell everybody. Go out there and tell everybody what you know, what you've learned. You know, start a Facebook page, organize meetups in your area, and share this information, share the philosophy, start discussing what world without money is going to be like. Talk about the Ubuntu and contributionism philosophy. And then also, especially if you live in the UK, this is very important, and I need to bring it up right now, because the Ubuntu Party UK will be participating in the elections on the 7th of May in the UK 2015. And this is a huge historic moment globally, because the Ubuntu Party, I led the Ubuntu Party in the elections in South Africa, also incidentally on the 7th of May, 2014. So you can see how the global elite are structuring these elections now, right? Mm-hmm. And 7th of May just happens to be six days after the 1st of May, which we know is an important historic day in, was it 1776, I think, for the Illuminati, yeah. and all those secret societies that seem to be activated around that era in the modern era. And so suddenly the people of the UK have an opportunity to vote, many who've been refusing to vote because they felt there's nothing to vote for. Now Paul Toussaint went and he registered the Ubuntu Party UK, and it will be on the ballot. So find the Ubuntu Party UK website. It's ubuntuparty.co.uk. Join and become a candidate or a representative. Download the manifesto. Print as many of the pamphlets as you can afford to. Start spreading them around in your area. Imagine if 10,000 people do that around the UK. It's a drop in the ocean. In South Africa, we had about 2,000 supporters that did this before the elections in South Africa. I have no doubt in the UK that number can grow to 10,000 people. If 10,000 people download the Ubuntu Party UK manifesto and distribute that in their area, and each one distributes 100, that you're talking about a large number of people that will be aware of the Ubuntu Party UK, and there's a very good chance that it'll get into Parliament. It could become the big surprise of the UK elections, where nobody expects a small little party of complete insignificance, but highly conscious energetically, serious energetically, because of its high levels of consciousness in amongst its supporters and followers. So it'll have a very strong energetic effect on the elections in the UK. And this is very exciting. The other important thing, obviously, about this is that this is, as far as I know, I might be wrong, but I don't think so. This is the first time ever that a global movement of unity consciousness and higher consciousness called the Ubuntu movement that has presented itself as a political party on the political front is now going to participate not only in one, but in two different countries as a political party in their elections. So we're now part of a global trans-border, transnational movement of consciousness that is injecting the virus of consciousness into the political beast. And this is a spectacular achievement.
It's amazing, Michael. You know, I'm laughing at Satya because I'm thinking, well, no one, I bark on about this all the time. Most people don't vote. I don't vote. What's the point? It's like being in a restaurant, choosing from a menu when you're starving to death. There's three choices on the menu. You know they're all going to give you the shit sort of, or make you sick, you know? And you know when it comes to the table, it's not going to be what they said on the menu anyway. They're lying cheats, you know. So and most people know that. So, and I've talked about this consciousness for a long time now as well, Michael. We're magicians with amnesia, and if someone has got some option where they can direct their consciousness, and particularly this is the exciting thing for me, that, you know, you're pretty much promising people that if we can come together as communities, which is what we want to do here as well, I'll discuss that with you later, bring people together, give everyone a little patch, if somehow they can pay for it, somehow, I don't know how, that's going to be another problem, but if the land's free, they won't have to. I believe people are going to be coming forward, giving land for free, farmers, and their compensation for doing that, if they're struggling, farmers, will be that their generations after them will be fed and have free electricity. How exciting is that?
Yeah.
And, you know, free electricity, free food, free warmth and shelter, it's the three things that the slave masters rely on to keep everyone in the headlock of slavery. And if you can talk about that, which you are, then, as you said, I've heard you say on your videos, people will flock in a stampede to vote for that party who is showing them. Because most of the reason people can't face their reality and face the slavery is because they know intrinsically that there's no other way of doing it. Show them another way, and the light bulb goes on, And I'll tell you something, Michael, I think we're going to see a huge transmutation now.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. So, you know, for people that might be listening to this and are going, okay, well, so what exactly is the Ubuntu Party going to do? What are you promising the people?
I was going to ask you that next.
That's the exciting thing is if you hear a crazy noise in the background, by the way, those are my two Ridgebacks that are just going wild in the garage next door. I don't know what they're doing, but they're chasing each other and making a hell of a racket.
We like that on the show. This is a natural sort of show. No glitz and glamour, so that's fine. I rather like it, actually. Go on, Michael. Go on.
This is really what the Ubuntu Party is all about. Remember, because the Ubuntu movement is about informing and educating people about their enslavement, informing them about the global banking elites and how they've manipulated and controlled the socioeconomic and the political arena, how they control our governments and so forth. So how do we convert this and transmutate this onto the political platform? Very simply, we use that information and that knowledge as the seven sort of basic points which have become our global Ubuntu Party, trans-border, transnational, seven-point promise to the people, just as a point of departure. This is not the whole Ubuntu and contributionism philosophy, because you can't, you know, give in an election the people a whole 360-page book and say, well, this is the philosophy. You've got to extract some of the key points and foundations, fundamental areas that affect people's lives dramatically, and use those to highlight what the movement and then now the party as a political front is going to do for the people. So the important things are, first of all, we got to treat the root of the problems. The root and the cause of all our problems and all our misery is the banking and the financial system. So that needs to be dealt with. And the way you deal with that is very simply. You close down the fraudulent private central banks. In the UK, it's the Bank of England. You shut them down and you replace it with a people's bank that issues money for the people, by the people, tax-free and interest-free. No levies, no fees, no interest, no inflation. Money is available for all the people, all the communities, wherever you may be. Money is always available and made available by the people's bank for whatever the people are trying to do to uplift their communities. So that's a huge mind flip. That suddenly basically guarantees that there'll be no joblessness. Everyone will have something to do. Everyone can move and live wherever they want to. They don't have to be confined to the cities where they're trapped due to socioeconomic circumstances and financial circumstances. They can get the hell out of the city and move into the smallest of towns. They'll always find something to do, because whatever they do for their community will be funded by the People's Bank. And that's just, that itself is an instant release of the strife and torment of millions and millions of people in the UK that are stuck and trapped in their jobs in places they don't really want to be and live, but they have to be there because they cannot go and move somewhere else because they won't find a job. By creating a people's bank, you change that overnight and alleviate that problem. Secondly, you restructure, obviously, the entire banking system. Then you start supporting the farmers, because now you've got to start getting to food. How do you provide the people with food? So you support the farmers on every level to grow organic food, so that they're not influenced and not hijacked and not controlled by giants like Monsanto and other GMO organizations that are poisoning our soil and poisoning our food. And make sure that you grow food gardens right across the country. Make sure that people have access to seeds and everything they need, which once again is provided for by the People's Bank, so that food is grown in abundance and nobody ever goes hungry. It doesn't even enter the equation. Obviously, the other thing is to support the scientists and to support the inventors and scientists with whatever they need to find alternative sources of electricity and alternative sources of energy, so that we do not depend on the coal and the nuclear power plants, because for those that have done research, know that that alternative energy and electricity has been found many, many times. But unfortunately, you know, free electricity and alternative petroleum transportation does not bode well for the motor, the oil industry, and also the electric giants that supply us and provide us with the electricity. So very quickly, we will be able to provide the entire country and everyone in the UK with free electricity. And that in itself is a huge mind flip once again, because people can't even imagine having free electricity. You know, in South Africa now, electricity has become so expensive that many people can't even afford electricity. They have electricity a few days of them of the week, and the rest of the time they just live by candlelight. And it's really, it's unbelievable. And then it, you know, it goes into supporting the traditional and natural healers to find, and again the scientists, to find cures for disease. Once again, we know that cures for all disease have been found, but those inventors, just as with the free energy devices, have either been killed or silenced or bribed, or simply just they just disappear, and their devices and their cures for all disease never reach the public, never reach the people, because curing disease is not good for business for the pharmaceutical giants. They're not in the business of healing and curing people and curing disease and healing people. They're in the business of treating people and keeping them in suspended medication for as long as they possibly can, because that's how they milk money out of us. Every single month, people go and buy their drugs. And that's what they are. They're drugs. They're not medicine. And so it goes. So those are just a few of the points. The others people can see on the Ubuntu Party website. It's a very simple story, people. You know, children, go into any primary school and ask the children in grade 1 and 2 and grade 3 and 4 what the solutions are, and you'll find that they'll give you all the solutions. They know what the solutions are. Why is it that our politicians can't find the solutions?
Well, you know,
our farmers and our scientists, our farmers and our scientists and the people that actually produce the things that we need, they have all the answers, they have the solutions, but they're constantly prevented from providing the people with the solutions because the government and the bankers that control them constantly get in our way.
Well said, Michael. And I said to someone today in my shop, because people often say to me, well, you know, the governments, they're not doing their job properly, they're corrupt, they're this, they're that. And I say, I think it's quite a nice way to put it now. I say, no, you've got it wrong. They're doing their job perfectly. The job that they're...
Yes.
Yeah, the job that they're hired to do, which is suppress the people, perpetuate fear, perpetuate debt, a system of debt and slavery and continual cycles of that. And that's they're the perfect people for that job, and that's what they're there to do. Don't kid yourself anymore. You know what I mean? Don't kid yourself anymore. And humanity, it's a torture camp that we're living in. Most people are secretly tortured. It's making people ill, it's giving people depressed. And I just thought, when you said that, Michael, you know, Monsanto actually create the pesticides and that, and then they're waiting with the drugs that they also make for the people when they get cancer from what they're eating, you know? It's unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely. It's unbelievable. It's a complete cycle that they've created. So, you know, it's also important to remind people of this very simple fact. And we've been so battered and bruised and so brain damaged and manipulated and brainwashed by the system and by the media that we've all forgotten this, or many of us have forgotten this. The government is the servant of the people. Okay, the mayors and the leaders that we elect, are we elect them to be the servants of the people, not to be the dictators or the slave drivers that have appointed themselves as the slave masters of the people. And they seem to have forgotten that, because many of these politicians go into politics, and some of them have noble ideas, but the moment they get swallowed by it, they change. They become part of that system. So people need to remember that we appoint our leaders to be our servants, to serve us and deliver on the needs of the people, everything that the people need to improve our lives. It is an insane thought that anyone could imagine that anyone that we appoint to do the best for us is actually doing completely the opposite. And that's exactly what's going on. Every week, every month, our governments are making new laws, new bylaws, new acts, new bills that they pass without our support, without people agreeing to these new laws that they pass. And each one of these new laws curtails our freedom and curtails our liberty a little bit more. It's like they're tightening the noose every month, all the time. They're tightening the noose of our freedom and our liberty. And it's going to get into the point where people are getting pushed right up against the rock, right up against the hard place with no escape. And once people have no escape, then there's only one way out, and that's the way in the direction from where the pressure is coming.
Very good point.
And this is where we are right now.
Very good point, Michael. And I always give people a caveat. And actually, I had Deepak Chopra on the program talking to us. He did a tape for me recently, warning people about GMOs. And I was delighted he did. I was pestering Deepak, please, you know, people listen to you. And, you know, for the first time, I think Deepak gave a real stern warning to people. It's a great video for people to watch on this program. And he said, if we don't change now and stop these people who are destroying the planet and us, we almost deserve to be further enslaved and killed. And I think, honest to God, it's almost like we get the leaders we deserve. You know, we're waving our flags at the Queen and Obama and hooray, hooray. We're waving our flags and cheering at the very people who are enslaving us. It's insanity, you know. And I think I think we've become like those elephants in a circus. They tie them to a post and they tug and tug and tug and tug and tug. And in the end, it's almost like, do you know what? You could take that chain off and they just give up. They don't go anywhere. So humanity's absolutely exhausted now, Michael, secretly. And people have had enough. They're sick. This system just is a sickness that's hurting humanity. And I think people have just, they are not smiling anymore. They're not happy anymore. So I know we're running out of time, Michael. Before we go, I want you to just paint a picture for people in UK now. Because if we can't change the government and their insatiable lust for greed, and let's be dead honest about it, they're psychotic. They're insane. What they're doing is insanity. We've got used to it. If they're not going to change, then what we've got to do is create a system without them, obviously, and turn our backs on them, right? So paint a picture of what a system could be like in UK now. People can borrow, get some funding or something for houses. Let's take a farm or something like that. Paint a picture of how beautiful it could be for people. Free electricity, free food. What kind of societies would we see blossoming, Michael? People who are happy, who are helping each other, who are being kind to each other. Empathy, ethics, morals, beauty, spiritual development, you know? It would be almost a utopian heaven on earth, wouldn't it?
Well, it is. It is a utopian. We are moving towards a utopian society and a planet of utopia, where we live pretty much in paradise. We live. Our planet is a most spectacular planet of abundance. We live on a planet of abundance. We do not live on a planet of scarcity. Mm. Scarcity is a construct and a byproduct of capitalism and corporate greed and corporate control. You know, think about it's an insane thought to say that we live on a planet of scarcity. I mean, it is such a lie, and some people believe it. Mm. So, like, one of the lies is, there's not enough water on our planet. Are you crazy? That is the most insane statement anybody could make, and people believe it. You know, our planet is two-thirds water.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Incredible.
And people believe it when they hear these warmongering dictators and liars and fascists that are trying to poison people's minds when they start saying, oh, water is a scarce commodity. We got to start controlling water, like that absolute monstrous CEO of Nestle, you know, that's been... on that video that's going around, that, you know, where he says that water should not be a human right, that water should be controlled by corporations. I mean, it's just, this is not a human being speaking. This is some sort of a monster talking. Mm. Mm. And this is what we need to guard people against. Remember, these corporations and our governments are corporations. They're not human beings. They're driven by some other weird perception. Mm-hmm. and a fundamental different way of thinking, and this has got to stop. So the whole philosophy of Ubuntu and contributionism is to move away from money, move away from hierarchical structures that benefit the few at the expense of everyone else, and create a utopian society where everybody has everything, because that's how it works. If in a small little town, and this is how I believe this could become a reality, because I do believe that the small towns and villages are the potential breeding grounds for this very simple and beautiful philosophy of Ubuntu and contributionism. Ubuntu is an ancient African philosophy of unity within community, which is carried by all ancient cultures around the world by different names, but it all comes to the same philosophy. And contributionism is just a modern day word that I came up with in 2005 that describe people within a community contributing their God-given talents, contributing their acquired skills towards a greater benefit of everyone in their community. So it's a lot easier to unite people in a small town or a small community than it is in a large city. So I believe that it's possibly in the small towns that we're going to find a small contributionist community that suddenly blossoms against all expectations. And once that happens, it's the end of capitalism and this draconian control and consumerism and hoarding and destroying our planet. It'll be the end of it, because it'll be the first domino effect. And the reason I say this is because the contributionist model pretty much devours and destroys capitalism and greed within its immediate surroundings. And just before we run out of time here, imagine a small town of 1,000 people. And we spoke about free electricity. Now, to some people, that might be very confusing. So again, when you start moving away from a society driven by money and greed and ego, it is not a simple thing. It is the most difficult job and task that we're facing right now in human history. This is what we're dealing with, because the way that money has been entrenched in our society, as we've discussed already. So it's a very tough job, very tough ask, and a difficult path to walk. But it doesn't mean it's impossible. It doesn't mean it has to take a long time. It can happen very quickly once people start seeing the fruits of their success of working together, working united, working in cooperation as opposed to in competition, working cooperatively for the benefit of all rather than in competition against each other to destroy each other so they can take a hierarchical, you know, become the king of the castle in their town. So the free electricity thing could be quite confusing. So I often use the electricity as the foundation of uniting people as opposed to dividing people. Because if you gave everybody a free electricity device or made free electricity devices available and they were £10,000, it could actually be a tool of division.
Good point.
And not a tool of uniting people.
Good point, Michael, yeah.
So this is what I want to guard people against. You know, don't think that because you can go out and buy a free energy device and you can run your house off the grid, that's not going to solve the problems of the world. It's going to make you one of those that has got something more than, and those that can't afford it are not going to have it. So that I see, that's the way that we're going to use electricity and free energy, the incorrect way. It's going to actually divide people even more. So I'd like to see electricity and the free energy thing being used as a tool of unification, uniting people in small towns. Once you have an electricity device, that the whole town can run off this electricity device, so everybody can have free electricity. So everybody is equal. Everybody has uncapped internet, uncapped electricity. But that electricity is also used for all the community projects, because the point of departure to create this utopian world of abundance within your community starts with community projects. And the community projects are driven by the same free electricity that everyone has access to. And in return for this free electricity, everyone in your town, in your community, must contribute 3 hours per week towards one of the community projects. Whether it's the bakery, the dairy, the cheese factory, the metal factory, the wood factory, the brick making, the whatever it is, the sewing, the making fabrics, the sheep, the food growing, whatever it is, 3 hours a week. What an exciting moment for that community. Suddenly you're participating in group activity interacting with people that you normally wouldn't meet, learning new skills, learning how to make cheese, or learning how to, you know, turn wool, sheep's wool, into usable garments, or whatever it is you're going to be working on. It's a very exciting time. But just think about the logistics now. 1,000 people in a small town working 3 hours a week in one of these community projects that benefit all the people of that town, that's 3,000 hours a week. First of all, you need quite a few community projects just to get those people to do something, right?
Yeah.
And those community projects are going to be producing an abundance of everything that those people are involved in. There'll be too much bread, too much cheese, too much milk, too many bridges, too many rockets, you know, too many free energy devices or whatever you want to call it, too much technology, because people will be making it en masse. So this contributionism philosophy that I've been sharing with people is based on creating three times the amount that you need for your whole community. Three times the amount of food, three times the bread and cheese, whatever it is you need. And you, once you've consumed the one third for your own community, the other two thirds are made available to all your neighboring communities, but at a fraction of the price that they can get it at their supermarkets. Why can you give it to them at a fraction of the price? Because it's costing you virtually nothing, because you got free electricity. All of you are doing all the stuff for free. It's your time that you're contributing. So there's a minimal cost in producing those goods and services and products. So suddenly your neighboring communities will be benefiting from your contributionism philosophy and getting all this stuff virtually for free, just the way you do. And what have you done? The moment you've done this or set the system up, you've collapsed the capitalistic model in all your neighboring communities. And that's the beginning of the end for capitalism and the corporate global structure that has enslaved humanity. And it's a beautiful start for a beautiful future. And that's what the people of the UK on the 7th of May have a chance to vote for, to bring this kind of thinking into place into the United Kingdom, so that the people can start moving away from this disgusting world that we find ourselves in, trapped as debt slaves to the bankers that control our governments, moving away slowly but surely, step by step. It's not going to happen in one move. Step by step, we move away from this enslavement and find our way into these utopian communities, wherever you want to live and do whatever your heart desires, whatever your God-given talents are, that makes you wake up with a smile on your face, because whatever it is you're going to do will ultimately benefit your community, because you're going to do it for everyone in your community. Contributionism is not a one-to-one exchange. It's not a barter or trade situation. It's doing what you're good at for everyone's benefit in your community. And if everybody is doing it, that means everyone has everything that they need all the time. I hope that what didn't sound like too much of a lecture.
It was a beautiful piece of it was poetic for me, mate. I was beautiful, and thank you so much. And I'll just finish off by saying literally that the last thing, you know, we are at a crossroads, everyone. You've got to do this now, because we've got a big chance now to escape. I believe we've got a portal of opportunity now where things are getting so bad that we've got a chance to jump off the slave ship, actually, and onto another lifeboat, like Michael's talking about with Ubuntu. And I believe that the last thing we want is a recovery. They keep talking about recovery back to what's killing us. Because it's like giving mouth to mouth to a bloody Frankenstein's monster that's already killed you, destroyed your generations of people. And you're saying, well, we got a bit of a recovery back to what's killing us. It's over, everybody. We must let it go now before it kills us and kills the planet for the future humanity. Michael's got a solution. And I advise everybody to follow him very, very carefully. And on May, I'll be doing my best as well, Michael, to administer the smelling salts to as many people as I can here to tell them to choose another option which could save their children and their grandchildren's future. And I believe we're there. And now I know we've run out of my time, Michael. So I just want to say again, thank you for your tremendous work, Michael. It's very inspiring. And what you're doing is wonderful to help humanity, and it's incredible what you're doing. And I really, from me and all the people who haven't been born yet on this planet, thank you so much for all the work you're doing. Just say a final goodbye to everyone. Thank you, Michael.
Well, thank you, Jason. You're the messenger of the message. Somehow I got hold of this message, and And I guess I understood it and was able to put it into words and get people to pay attention, and it's working. So thank you for taking this message to the people and doing what you're doing, because without people like you, this message would just be sitting with me. That would be a terrible waste. And would I also just like to remind the people that listen that are in the UK, if you want to participate or get involved in the Ubuntu Party UK, please do so. Paul Toussaint, who started, registered the party, needs all the help he can get in different fields, different areas of expertise. There's going to be necessity for all the different things that you need in an election, running in an election campaign, from fundraising to PR to publicity, and you can fill in the gaps there. Please go onto the Ubuntu Party website, and there's a form that you can fill in. UbuntuParty.co.uk. Go to join us, and there's a form that you can fill in if you want to become either just a representative in your area or actually a candidate to stand for the Ubuntu Party in your area, and support Paul Toussaint and make this happen in the UK. I'm really looking forward to seeing how this unfolds.
Thanks, Michael, and again, everyone, do that, and thanks everyone for listening tonight to Outside the Box with me, Jason Yacetis. Thanks, Michael Tellinger, for coming on. Ubuntu.co, what is it? I can't even see it now again. .za, go to there.
And UbuntuParty.co .uk.
That's it. And thanks, Michael, for all your great work, and keep it up. And I do believe there's a turning point, and we've got a chance now to really escape this prison planet. And I think we're going to do it, because we've got no choice. It's sinking, and we've got to get off. And there is a lifeboat. So thanks, everybody, for watching Outside the Box. And I'll see you next time. And thank you all. Bye-bye.